Speaker today is Cristina Gauba from University of Illinois Urbana and Fermi Lab. So thanks for giving the talk, and you can start.
Thank you for a kind invitation. I really enjoyed being here last couple of days. I definitely feel like it's a very useful trip for myself. So I hope I can visit again in the future. Okay, so this is the today I'm going to share with you some work that hopes we hope that could be done this month. Okay, so I'm trying to push it. So I told them I'm giving a talk. I need to finish this like now, like this year, this month. My collaborators are Nikita Blinov, Ronnie Harnick, Ryan Janish. They're all particle theory people, phenomenologists. And Anil Sinclair, he's a experimentalist or like electrical engineer in integrated photonics. So, okay, so we're going to do optical range axion or dark photon dark matter search with basically integrated photonics. That's the idea. Okay, just to get some set the scene. Because we want to be inclusive. Right, so these are the two couplings we're going to look for with photons, because you see each of them can couple to photons in this very basic Lagrangian. The axion one is nonlinear, but it's sort of almost like a linear thing if you turn on the background B field, and the dark photon is just linear mixing. Okay, so the target is between, I said between 0.121 eV, mostly because of the technology is available, kind of. So the photonics, usually, if you look into this a little bit, people do it with communications, right? So there are wavelengths, like where they're mostly happy with is around 1.5 microns to like 0.5 microns. That's like visible to near infrared regime. However, there are some like research efforts going on trying to explore the mid-infrared and even long-wave infrared, which is just right here. So there's visible or like a near infrared. Let's say here it's like roughly, let's say, little mic 2 microns. Okay, so there's like mid-infrared. Generally, it's like between anything between 2 to, let's say, 5, 6 or 7. Right, so why don't we say 5? Okay, and then there's the long wave infrared. Yeah. So they're all infrared, but the technologies to realize these gadgets are very different. So they are somehow have their own categories in electrical engineering. So the long wave infrared, the ones I've seen that allows the type of work we want to do is restricted to like 11 or 12 microns. Yeah, something like this. Okay. So this is really just practical purposes. We want to stop here, but really, I mean, going down in wavelength will be other, there are lots of other challenges, as you'll see later. Okay, so this is the target frequency, and then this is the coupling, and then the main thing we're doing is we're going to use optical resonator. Okay, so the ones you are super familiar with is like febrile pearl epsilon, just like the one you heard about LIGO, which is like two big mirrors with like vacuum in between, and the light can be bounced, light can be bound in between the mirrors and live for a very, very long time. So right, that's an optical resonator, but that's not the type of resonators we're doing today. We're doing micro, like very tiny scale optical resonators using dielectrics. Okay, so the idea is you start with a waveguide. So this is your dielectrics, and then usually I call this is the core of your waveguide, right? And has refractive index N1. It has to be much bigger than 1. And there's a clad N2. So now we know there's something we learned in like kindergarten called total internal reflection, right? So if your light comes in at an angle that is smaller than the critical angle, you're bound inside this thing, right? So let's write down. N2/N1, okay, like this. So if light comes in at an angle bigger than the critical angle, you are inside. So now the bigger the contracts of index, the more range of wavelengths you can sort of fit inside this thing. So that's something we want, a big contracts of index. This is just like an optical like waveguide. So to make a resonator, there is one more thing you need to do, which is you need to pick. So let me start with a simple example, which is I take this waveguide and bend it into a ring. Okay, so I'm drawing. This is my. Okay, so now here's N1, N2 here, N2 here, like this. Right? So now the light is like can bounce back and forth inside. However, there is a special condition because it has to be that the total length of the waveguide or the optical resonator is an integer times the effective wavelength, right? So it's the vacuum wavelength divided by the refractive index, like this. What?
It's very difficult for us, some of us, to see.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. Okay. So like this. Thank you so much. Yes.
Yeah. Wait, should I think of this as like a fiber or like a two-dimensional?
Oh, it's really three-dimensional. It's like a trapezium usually. It's like this cross-sectional area. So you like. When you build it, you like chop off the inside and outside. That's one way to put it. So this is the cross-sectional view of this wave guy.
But it's basically like a ring of fiber that's been closed, right?
Yeah. But they're like much smaller than the usual, like if you think the fiber optics that are really thick, this is like very tiny. Yeah, let's talk about the dimension. Yeah, the dimension is roughly, we said, right, so there's a lambda times some integer number. This is the length. So the lambda is like set by whatever you think about here. So the SM is usually on the order of like 100. Okay, so you are just traveling along this, I can't draw, many, many times, right? So, and the size of this, let's say this is the width. This is the width, sorry. Width, this is the thickness. Like, they're on the order of your like, size of the wave, right? Because you want them to be bound inside. We'll talk a little bit more about like confinement. Okay, so let's see. Right, now I have to talk a little bit more specific about these using some special models of resonators. Ring resonator, some special models of it. Yes, let's talk about ring resonators. Oh, a little more about ring resonators, a little back to axion, dark photon. Okay, a little more about ring resonator. So a model to talk about light being confined in a ring resonator, in this, there are many ways to do it. So this is one way. So this is, this formalism is time independent, okay? It's like already like a steady state solution for this ring. So here you see is there is a resonator and it couples to a waveguide outside because eventually you sort of want to read it out or use it as a filter. So usually you always have at least like these two pieces together. And this coupling is written in this way, right? So the idea is you shoot a light this way, right? Going and it has a chance to enter the ring if it satisfies some on-shell condition with the ring. And then you look at what is light outside, like up from output from here. So you want to calculate what is the transmitted thing in terms of, let's say, the input field. And the way to do it is this is called transfer matrix method. And then you assume conservation probability at this coupling, right? And then another thing is, because once I'm here, I can travel around the ring many, many times, right? And then each round trip, I can accumulate a factor. This is real, which is less than one. It represents the loss. That means if I have some loss, I will, the amplitude is going to drop after I travel one round trip. So this is a round trip loss for the ring. And there is a phase. This phase is just the effective phase you accumulate through traveling around the ring, right? So it's n omega times z, right? K times z, basically, right? Okay, so this is your basic model. And then you can compute everything just given these things, right? Okay.
I cannot see the letters, so it's ET2, and then in the line you have
EI1, ET1, so T means transmitted, so I means input, more like, you see, so this is a model, so really everything depends on EI1, right. So yeah, this is just a way to write down the conservation of probability or field at each point.
EI2 is whatever comes out of the resonator before going into the wavelength?
Yeah, so EI2 is whatever comes back here and then go back. So it will be a function of like this thing, basically. And then we don't really care about EI2 in this case. Right, so here, this is intensity at this end, okay, as a function of wavelength. So you're just shooting a bunch of different wavelengths and see what happens. So this shows, so also this is critically coupled, okay, so maybe can talk a little bit about coupling at the moment. So as light travels through this thing, right, there is a loss, there is a chance they can get lost, and there's a chance they can get lost back to the, well, not lost, right, they can be read out into the bus. So now if you tune these couplings to be the same, that's called critical coupling. So a light has 50% of chance being lost into the heat or getting coupled back to the bus is called critical coupled. Okay, so you are seeing like a lot of ADMX type of experiments. People talk about what sort of coupling, that's what they mean. They're just tuning this readout against the lost or loss of the system. So at the critical coupling, this is what you see. Okay, so there are some parameters I didn't tell you at all, but let's imagine, right? So these wavelengths are chosen at the special condition, match the special condition where this, right, this is the integer. And you see the power gets sucked into the resonators completely. So this one resonator plus the bus is a good filter, right? So imagine you want to filter some wavelengths, this allows you to do that. So that's why it's an interesting gadget for photonics in communications. Good.
Why the two dips?
Yeah, so this is the readout at this end. The dips means you're losing them. So they get all sucked into the resonator and they're just like circulating here, getting lost into the heat.
That's not what dips there, I was wondering about that too.
Oh, yeah, well, let's talk about it. Yes, I'm going to talk about the next important parameter, which is something called like free spectral range and forward, yes. Because like here, right, you're allowing many, many number of modes inside. So the free spectral range, because we said this M is on the order 100, right? So you can imagine these different peaks are just changing M by one. So that's, yeah. So that determines the free spectral range, which is the, I'm just like throwing a bunch of names at you. I feel bad, but let's just do this because it'll be it's sort of good to know them. So the free spectral range is the gap between the resonators, right? It's controlled by your IR cutoff, right? So the larger the boxes, the narrower these peaks will be next to each other, right? So like this. And another thing is called full-width half maximum, which is like where you get, you know, the peak, but there is a spread of it because your light is not perfectly like conserved, right? There is a way you can get lost. So now this, at a critical coupling, you can write it down with this expression, it depends on the loss, right? It just tells you the loss controls the width of this peak. Okay, if there's no loss, so it's like almost like a delta function, but because I have loss, so it can't be, there is a width for it.
Is it obvious why the loss is only a real function and doesn't have an imaginary function?
Say, can you speak louder?
Is it obvious why the loss is real and doesn't have an imaginary function?
The loss, so really this whole thing is could be a complex number, right? So I'm just separating these two things so that I call this this amplitude as like the decreasing of my amplitude.
Oh.
But this whole thing is really complex, right? Does that answer your question? Okay. Right. So an important factor, why we do this? Because we care about quality factor for these resonators. And they're defined in terms of these numbers. And then if you've seen this before, right, the finesse, when people talk about optical resonators, that's usually the number they quote. This is defined by the free spectral range divided by the full width half maximum. Okay, that's it. So it tells you how, like, it doesn't really depends on the length of this system. It just says how much loss I have, which sort of depends on the length itself, right, because it's a round trip thing. Yeah. So this is a finesse. And the quality factor is basically the finesse times the number of wavelengths I can fit inside. Okay, so it's basically, if you like, M here. Okay, so that's why you can get a sort of big-ish Q, even though your finesse is like very tiny, which is essentially what LIGO is, right? Because LIGO has mirrors which are good. The finesse is like, say, 10 to the 4. But their arms are huge, right? Kilometers, which is why their Q is huge. But anyway, so that's some numbers, right? So I'm adding more things here because eventually this diagram will be a little bit like a way to think about axion, actually, in the end, or dark matter. There is some input. There is like some drop pot, so this is like your readout, kind of. So you can imagine in the axion or dark photon dark matter case, you have some input, right, from the dark matter, and then you try to read out somehow. So in this scenario, right, these two, there's like these dips, which corresponds to this end, but there's this peak, they correspond to where you read out at this end, okay? So it's like when you are on resonance with the resonators, you can go from here all the way down here, okay, like this. Good. Challenges, yes. Let's talk about challenges. I just told you something about resonators. They're amazing little objects, but they're too tiny, right? So that's the challenge. Just to see the challenge like very concretely in numbers, let's write down what power do you get from one single resonator, like a usual optical resonators? So I'm going to just quote a cavity formula just like a usual. Oh, sorry. Should I just move? To... Okay.
Just come over this side.
This side? Oh, yeah. Like here? Yeah.
I can't.
One cavity, okay. Here I'm assuming critical coupled. If it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't matter. It's just some assumption about the readout. Okay. So here, let's write down something. I'm using some sort of notation I want to use. Like this. I just define my P0 this way. Because I want to like separate out these part from dark photon for my models. Okay, so my models is this thing, ci squared. Okay, so for axion, roughly. Oh, this is for on resonance. Okay. Like this. Okay. So then the. Uh, There's assumption about polarization I'm making here. I'm just assuming it's randomly polarized. Okay. Next thing, right? This is the overlap factor, which just means it's a measure of momentum conservation. And you could already see this will be very bad for momentum conservation because this photon has lots of momentum, whereas my dark matter is non-relativistic, right? So it's going to be bad. But let's write it down in a general formula, and then we can talk a little more. So so I'm ignoring the direction of the B field and the polarization factor. Okay, so just there's a. Here, oh, I'm running out of space. Sorry. Okay, so this. This up to this part you should be very familiar with. That's just like your ADM max formula as well. You probably see it somewhere. I put this explicitly by hand just to sort of remind you this because in the end we're going to have a system which will be very much larger compared to the axion coherence length. If you're not like, let's just calculate numbers again, right? So for these range, this lambda dB is h over p, h bar, 2 pi, m dark. V, I'm taking V dark to be 10 to the minus 3, right, like this. OK, so this is my wavelength. So yeah, so if I'm thinking about 1 micron, this is 1 millimeter, 10 micron, 10 millimeter. So they are like very, very tiny, yeah, very, very small scale. So I'm going to, in the end, you'll see this actually matters, but not for the single resonator, okay? For the single resonators, I'm assuming it's within the Broglie wavelengths, okay? So now let's plug in some numbers. So for now, I didn't tell you how am I going to go around this thing. Let's just assume there is some way to say I can get an order 0.1. Some sort of way to do that, okay? So let me even, okay, so this requires special technique to do phase matching. If I apply some special technique, which is basically introducing, like Jin Wu did in his paper, periodic structure, photonic crystal type of thing, I'd say I can get like roughly 0.1. This is already like a pretty good, like optimistic guess for this number, and then I'm just going to plug in all numbers. This is what I get.
Is the photon generated in the ring or not?
Yeah, in the ring.
So how do you put that in the ring?
How do I what?
How do you put the photonic crystal parts in the ring?
Yeah, I'm going to show you some pictures later. Yes. So good. So just to start with, just to get some numbers, right? Let's assume I do some special techniques to do phase matching. And even with that, this is a number, 10 to the minus 14 per second. OK, let's do axion because we know we all love axion. 10 to the minus 14 per second. I use Q to the 10 to the 5. OK. I use a B to the 10 Tesla. For this, okay, assuming this. V. Yeah, this is just saying, take a resonator, this is the volume, assuming 10 Tesla, some good Q, this is the number. Okay, very hopeless. So this is just very difficult, right?
I'm confused about something. So this is a dielectric thingy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, for the dark photon, where is the energy coming from? The power that you have out, it's larger than the power that you are putting in, which is all the dark photons that you have. But this thing won't have a magnetic field, doesn't have a voltage. Where's the energy coming from in that case, into the resonator?
Oh yeah. So for the dark photon, it's linearly mixed into the photon. So it's part of its power just the field oscillates into the real photon field.
No, I understand, but I guess that, so P0 is just all the energy that you have in dark photons, right, and photons.
Oh yeah, P0, yeah,
then
yeah.
You're saying that the power output in the cavity is P0 times a big number that is Q.
I get enhanced by the Q of Feynman resonance, yes.
Right, but where's the energy coming from? If there's no B field, no voltage applied to the cavity, nothing?
Yeah, because this is the interaction, I'm assuming.
No, I understand, but that interaction cannot give you more energy than the dark photon energy
density.
It's times
the coupling, right?
Yeah, it's times the coupling, I know.
But
the coupling is small, the coupling is small.
She has the coupling.
Yeah, I know, the coupling is small, but when the coupling, say that the coupling is order one, then P0 times Q is larger than P0.
Which is fine, which is what you get, actually. Your circulating power in a resonator is much higher.
Usually you get power in the resonator when you load the resonator somehow. You apply a voltage or a magnetic field or something, but this is a dielectric thing.
Well, cavity does the same thing, right?
Sorry,
what? You get a small amount of power and get a big amount of power per cavity.
Yeah.
Yes, but where's the energy going from? That case is
the
feeder.
It's like
No, but the feeder can only give you P0, right? Unless you have like a magnetic field or a voltage that you apply to your resonator that is P0 times Q, no?
Like the peak power can be bigger than P0, of course.
Yeah.
It's just like you're collecting P0 for a long time. So the power just go up. That's bringing up the cavity.
It's a resonator.
Yeah,
understood. Like there's a resonator, but usually there's a resonator like gets the energy from somewhere. I'm a bit confused.
No, it's always like epsilon squared times rho times Q.
Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. You have like many experts in resonators here. They can help me answer the question.
Per second, right?
Yes.
I don't understand how it can be bigger.
Yeah.
If you don't have a magnetic field.
Oh, challenges. Yeah, back to the challenges. This is already like a sort of very challenging because you're facing this sort of number, and the best kind of dark cone is like very far away from this, right? So the challenge is one, you need to obviously phase match to get this thing to be some reasonable number, not like completely tiny, okay? Not like zero. Two, you need, one is not enough. Let's say I want large numbers resonators. But not large number readout. If I connect one readout to one resonator, I'm just introducing more and more like readout noise that way. So, okay, so I want many resonators, but all coupled to a one readout to avoid that. Not many readout, readout as a photon counter, right? Okay. Three, now I'm going to go bigger, right? Lots of resonators all coupled to something at the readout. I'm actually going to encounter the issue of going beyond coherence. Okay, so I'm bound to go beyond that. If I start to have many, many resonators, they're all coupled to a readout. I have to worry about some sort of interference effect. Because usually you don't care about it for ADM max, because everything is perfectly.
Beyond the wavelength, like there's no interference.
For us, there will be. So for us, you will see. I'll make analogy to your lamppost in the end. It will be because we're choosing a very bad ways to couple our system, so that it will be a problem. Okay. So these are the challenges. Right, challenges. Phase matching. Okay, back to phase matching. I got this. Yes.
I think it's okay. We can all see.
Yeah,
this is fine.
Phase matching. Okay.
Can I see your joint mic? Don't worry about it.
Okay. So phase matching, as we said, we're going to take advantage of periodic photonic structure. and they support block modes. Right? So this is a general expression for a block mode. You represent this electric field with a block wave factor as a product of this periodic function over the lattice site multiplied by this phase, right? So the big K is the momentum between different cells or lattice cell, between different cells of your lattice. And then here explicitly I just write this is periodic over the lattice vector, and then require in this dielectric to make sense, you need the dielectric function to be a function of the, to be periodic as well. Right, so if you take this, okay, suppose your E1 takes this form, and you just rearrange your expression a little bit, and this is what you get. Okay, so you get an eta U, which means it's the same here, but now the volume shrinks to each lattice unit cell. I call it unit cell, which is like a, unit cell. So just one lattice site. Multiplied by some sum over all the contributions from different cells. Right, okay, just like that. Here, I explicitly assume my resonator is much less than lambda, the Bohr wavelength, so I don't care about this. I take it to one for this.
Do you understand the sun to be going around the ring?
Yes, it will be. I'll show a picture. Do I have a, I do have a picture. Yes, okay, this is a very, this is a naive drawing. Okay. 1D toy model. Okay, I promise you more pictures later. Toy model, this is my 1D lattice, okay? I have a periodic structure over big lambda, so this is my unit cell, where size A has effective refractive index N1, and then this B, size B has refractive index N2. And the way to achieve it here, just you see a little like grooving going on. So I achieve this by periodically groove my modes, okay? So if you're like a KK mode person, you understand immediately why you can do that, right? Because beta, right? Beta 1, 2 is your momentum along this dimension, right? We'll see one a relation later when you like how does this n depends on the thickness of this thing. Just some picture. Maybe this is too early for that. That's fine. Why don't we just look at this? Right. So this, I'm just assuming this is the ring resonator. So I'm computing this again, one ring. Okay. This is one ring. I'm computing whatever I just wrote down there for this ring, normalized by the peak power it has. So this axis is you're assuming. So once you pick a structure, you can only target a specific frequency. So in this case, it's like one EV. I'm just targeting. And then you just like calculate it for different frequency and see what's the response, okay? And this is the general response you get. And you do get like a peak at one for your target frequency and rest of them are suppressed, okay? And the other thing I had, eta U, right? Which is your, remember the overlap factor now down to the lattice site. And this is roughly speaking the difference N1, like the index contrast divided by their product square, product. And then you have to square it. So you see again, you want an effective index as large contrast as possible. And it's actually quite hard with this periodic grooved structure. One more thing, these gray curves, I show you the dispersion. So this dispersion is just big K wave vector as a function of omega. I normalize it so that you you see it this way. So this is K equals zero. One Brillouin zone, like second Brillouin zone.
So may I ask, so you have like a N1 part and two part, like what's the thickness of that then?
Thickness of this thing?
No, like in the picture on the left.
This here, the thickness. Yes, I'll show you a plot of that. I actually cannot do this for perfectly rectangular boundary conditions because they're not separable. So I'm doing it with some toy model again, a toy model of toy model. But before we do that, let me just show you something people made, okay, with periodic structure. And this is an example of periodically grooved lithium niobate on insulator waveguide. Okay, so in this application, they're interested in to do like second harmonic generation with the nonlinear chi2 of this special dielectric. So they need to figure out some sort of phase matching, basically matching the momentum between two of these low energy momentums to high energy momentum. They need to somehow do that in this crystal. That's why they do it. Okay, so this is just the lithium niobate silica. So this is this cross-sectional view of the waveguide. It's a trapezium. And you can see, really, because for dielectric, the boundary condition is not metallic. So the modes are actually like spread out. So this is where like all the leaky things can happen, right? Because as soon as you start to spread out, you will see, it will get lost. So now I want to compute, like, as an toy example, how does N effective can depend on the size of the core in this waveguide. So I cannot do it for this example because it's too complicated. I can only do this because you can actually separate it due to cylindrical symmetry. Okay. So for this simple example, I do a calculation using its effective index theory. Here, this is a plot of assuming N1 inside is 2.2, N2 is 1.45 for some lowest mode for this waveguide. I can compute the N effective index as a function of the size width of this waveguide. So you see it spans all the way from this end to this end, right, depending on how you change the size of this thing. So does that make sense? I didn't actually show you the formula. I just computed and I say this is the result. So you actually see to generate a large sort of index contrast, you really need to change the width by an order, almost order one of the wavelengths, which is a very large depth. So it will create lots of loss because of the scattering, which is easier to think in this picture, actually, because if you create a lot of structure, your instance angle, sometimes you can go beyond the critical angle, right? So not beyond, smaller than the critical angle if you start to create these structure. Another way to think of it. I'm 15 minutes away from Neanderthal, oh my God. All right, so here is a picture of the block loss, just meaning they need to worry about how lossy this structure is as well. And then you can measure it in terms of dB per centimeter and as a function of groove depth for them. So this omega 1, omega 2 are the two different modes here. I think omega 1 is... Yeah, so omega, one of them, the low frequency is 1.5 nanometer, the higher frequency is double the frequency, right?
So may I ask, like, if this experiment is done like cryogenically or
room temperature? Yeah, because for them, this is still like at 1 EV, so they sort of care a little about that. But like, yeah, when you go down to low frequency, you need to actually worry about the thermal stuff. So you can turn this number, dB per centimeter, into some Q. Because we have a better feeling of like, I have a better feeling of Q. When someone talk about dB per centimeter, I don't really understand what it means. So this is like roughly speaking. This block loss is basically a measure of like the surface scattering loss. So it's basically every time the light goes scatter with like your unevenness, you can have a chance to be lost. Roughly speaking was, I'm just taking there's some special formula to relate these things. Okay, so in the limit when your ring, let's say eventually I want to bend this thing and make it into a ring, when the ring size is much less than 1 centimeter, this is how they're related. Okay. To get Q 10 to the 3, I can accept for this wavelength roughly 100 dB per cent, or 100, you know, on the order of 100 dB per centimeter. So if I see any figures, if it's like bigger than 100 dB per centimeter, that just doesn't look good to be used as this experiment. That's a number to think about. Radiation loss, okay, now we have to bend it into the ring, right? So bend will cause radiation loss. And one way to think about it is that, right, these profiles, electric field, are not completely inside or confined inside my waveguide. So as you bend, you can imagine if you want to be kept inside the total waveguide, the phase velocity needs to be less than whatever the velocity it can propagate in the media. Otherwise, you'll be lost, right? Does that make sense? You can calculate this radiation loss through this way. Okay, so then what did I do? Yeah, I calculate some example again of the radiation loss by bending this waveguide. Basically, here I'm calculating for three different propagation, like n effective is your propagation speed. Okay, so again, for the if your n effective is closer to the clad or to your environment, you have a better chance to be lost, which makes sense, right? You need a larger index of contrast to confine your modes. So, as you go down, you can go down to lower loss. That's something we desire as well. So another type of loss that could occur in these like little structure is the absorption loss, which is sort of less irrelevant for lithium niobate material, but for other materials like silicon, they are more relevant. But for now, let's just not talk about absorption loss. So yeah, so all of these loss actually contribute to the intrinsic Q of your resonator. Radiation, absorption, and scattering, yes. Another type of resonator, which is actually more interesting, this is like a ring resonator again, but you see it's sort of the walls of this is created by setting up the medium material so they have a band gap to prevent the modes to be leaked into the surrounding. Okay, so this is like your effective ring resonator, and this is the waveguide that couples to the ring resonator. This is just an example to say you can also do this sort of thing to do ring resonators. And in this example, there is no periodic structure here, but you can imagine drilling more holes here, right? So, but you need the holes that don't have the same pattern as the surrounding. So you can create a mode that is bound inside and phase match with your axion or dark photon that has a larger index contrast because now you are between the air and whatever this material is. So this is essentially, I think, a much better way to do phase matching. However, to drill holes means you have a you know, it's hard to control the smoothness of the holes. To have good quality, again, you need to be careful of these like scattering surface unevenness to the loss.
Actually, to me, like it sounds like a better, like easier to make, like because the other thing, like the one problem we had, like making things that bend,
mm-hmm.
is that once you like because like in the end you need to go to quadratic temperatures to just
right.
like the noise smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Like the thing gets very brittle.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And,
you think this is a better? Yeah, that's
yeah,
what I think.
Like
that,
thing will break.
That's what I think too. This thing I have less. Sorry, go.
I was gonna say you're not physically bending it, right? You can fabricate on a crystal and then like.
No, no, but like you have like two different materials which has different expansion problems.
Yeah. So this you. More like drill holes, like as they're expanding, they're sort of expanding more uniformly, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, so the difficulty with this is actually drilling holes very, very evenly so that you create the perfect gap you want. Otherwise, you are increasing your Q kind of. You're getting a hit on Q that way, basically, yeah. Some example, right? So in the last 10 minutes, I'm going to talk to you how to couple all these resonators now together in parallel and couple them to a readout, some examples, okay? So this part, I actually didn't have time to write down more stuff, so I'll just tell you how we did the calculation. This is the model. You arrange resonators of your choice next to each other along the same waveguide, and you couple it out to a readout. And hopefully this readout can combine with some, so you're going to print a lot of them together and try to couple all these waveguides together to the same photon detector. That's the sort of idea. And you want to solve what is the readout here. We actually decide to use the Heisenberg-Lajoinville equations, the one just same as cavity folks do. And here we assume some Gaussian distribution of the velocity of the axion, so that way we automatically take into some sort of correlation scale for the axion source. So then finally we assume there is the dark matter sources effectively sourcing at each location. They're sitting at each location. They can source a wave that is a standing wave inside the resonator. But when it leaks to the waveguide, it could leak this way or that way. There's a 50-50 chance. Let's calculate for one single side what is the power. Time average, you should get the same on both. Okay, so you solve this system, and you plot something. Okay, so first thing we plot is we assume all of them have the same frequency and solve what is the readout at this end as a function of your frequency. Okay, so I pick omega r is my target frequency I want to do. N is the number of resonators I put in this line in series or actually in parallel. Beta is, again, this coupling back again is like when you have a loss, how much you are tuning your coupling to the readout. Here, this is sort of defined in this special some way. If you do cavity, usually you know what I mean. As you can see, as you go to like a larger and larger number, you don't gain, which makes sense. It's just like it's a bad setup of the lamppost, which is essentially lamppost is doing is you stack in the vertical direction where your modes propagate. You don't want to go beyond the coherence, but the horizontal, the transverse direction, you can be as big as possible. Okay, that's what lamppost is sort of like. But here you're like vertically making it longer than the coherence length. That's why you get a hit. Does that? So that's a bad.
Does it matter if you bend it or wrong?
I don't think so, because it's essentially all the, you can imagine this this ring, this in a way, the way you focus this means you select this direction to be the propagation direction. So all of the modes, they couple out in the same direction along this waveguide. So there's this specific direction just picked up by this waveguide. Yeah, so it's a bad setup of the lamppost, you can imagine. So that's why you do get a hit. Because you're increasing the thing in the z direction, not the transverse, yeah. So this looks very bad, right? however, you can imagine, why don't we do different frequencies, right? So now I don't want to worry about interfere. Let's just give up these coherence ideas completely and try to couple all of them together. So I'm choosing a series of resonators, which is separated by fractional difference, some delta, which will be on the order of 1 over q. Okay, so then you solve again for like Pn as a function of your frequency, where omega 1 is like the, let's say, the lowest frequency in the series. It's actually the lowest frequency in series, the first one here, yeah. This picture is just showing as you increasing in number of resonators, you're increasing in the response, okay, your width increase. But your peak power maintains, like, roughly don't change, which sort of makes sense because they're sort of independent resonators. So you get a sort of broadband-ish that way. This is another one to say how you can you don't have to necessarily arrange the resonators in the order of the frequencies. You can pick whatever ways to arrange them, so to avoid like maximal interference between different peaks. So I just like pick different sort of ways to arrange your resonators and then calculate what is the response. The blue curve is actually in the order of these resonator. So you see a sort of large interference between them. The other ones are like trying to break this resonators as a sequence of the frequencies to avoid some interference. If their frequencies are too close to each other, you don't want them to interfere. Setup. Give you a setup, just like a conceptual setup idea, right? So as I said, we can do this, and we can maybe do one of, like each of them takes a periodic structure, and this is an example of it, and you want to connect all of them to a photon detector. Yes. Active fractional chip. So this is just to say, basically, at least for this sort of design, the larger the frequency, the smaller each resonators will be. So the more you can print them. So essentially, your active volume for each frequency is the same. Okay. So because you compensate it by the number of resonators, if you go down in volume, given a fixed size of chip, it's just saying. So this is just a number to show, given a chip of certain size, what fraction is actually used for the axion or dark photon direct detection. So here I pick like 0.1% as just illustrate sensitivity, right? So dark matter needs a background magnetic field. So I think I'm running out of time. Let me just give you this. I'm open to questions. If you want to leave, you can leave, I'm saying, but you can ask me questions if you want to stay. Right. Thank you for your attention.
You have 5 minutes. Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is these assumptions. I'm assuming that dark count dominates the background. When I say dark count, it's the dark count from the readout photon detector only. And I'm also assuming there is a way to connect all the waveguides to that single photon detector with the dark count of that I desire. And if you want to do mid-infrared to like low long wave infrared, one needs to cool down these system as well. And then there will be additional issues with the dielectrics that we may not be aware of, that I'm just not taking into account here. So these are the assumptions I make, and some sort of a magnetic field one can have. Eventually, we found what matters is like a B square V, so you want to actually have a large volume MRI magnet instead of like very high magnetic field, small bore, not desirable. Okay, large volume. Low magnetic, it's not even that low, right? Still very strong, but relatively low magnetic field actually is better for you. Right, so with all these assumptions, I take one of them. So this is different lines. So basically this up line is assuming 100 centimeter cubed, okay? You can just like this number. This line is 1,000 centimeter cube of active volume that contributes to your dark matter search. So your actual thing will be much, much heavier than, or like bigger than this. Yeah. Right. These numbers are just like the number of the total integration time you need to scan this place, assuming each scan is each scan takes like roughly inverse of this time. Yeah, that's what I'm assuming, I think.
So for like 100 centimeter cube, how many of these gadgets do you have?
Oh, that's a lot, depending on like what frequency as well. So you can imagine going down to higher frequency will be like order of like this number. Like billions, yeah. Like high frequency. Low frequency, you get less each of them just because they write their size scales with the frequency too. Yeah. That's it. Thanks. Conclusion. I do have a conclusion. Just want to end on a high note. You know, look at my better, like beautiful dark photon curve, and then walk away with a good tone, right? So the conclusion. I said integrated photonics can be applied in dark matter direction at optical frequencies. I think photonic crystal cavities constitute the best option to phase match. 2D and 3D photonic crystals can provide better phase matching volume filling. Just in a sense, the ring actually has a hole in it, so you're sort of wasting your 1D, right? So you're wasting part of the volume. Right, and the last thing is I realized, going down in temperatures to target mid-infrared, long wave infrared, you need to worry about these issues. That's like our future. Yes, future. Okay.
Thanks for the talk.
Why does it seem to be getting better going to lower masses? And I know it's resonant, so it should be flat, but I mean, why?
That's a great question. It should be flat. It's because the way I design my resonators, I pick for the dark photon, it's essentially flat, but because each of them comes with a chain of resonators, okay, so because they're targeting different frequencies, so I'm making that chain of resonators all have the same volume, so it's like changing a little bit, but not too much. So you have like a slight tilt.
That's about an order of magnitude between the endpoints, though, but...
No, like for yeah, no, it's not. For axion, it's like change of order of magnitude. For the this is like
like the blue curve from the lower end you plot it to the higher end you plot it, like at least half an order of magnitude, if not more.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be flat. It's the choice of the volume I'm making for the resonators. So yeah, I can show you more details. It's like there is a different, it's just a choice for the volume. Yeah, I'll show you. Yeah. For one single cavity, they are exactly, they should be flat. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.